You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swabey. Listen to conversations with award-winning filmmakers, directors from the golden age of television, and creatives from the indie film community who continue to inspire the next generation of filmmakers. And now, over to your host, Damian Swabey.
Today on Filmmaking Conversations, I speak to Stephanie O'Neill, a producer who has worked on loads of short films, music videos, features, and live theatrical productions. Some of her short films have been seen at Aspen Shorts, Palm Springs International, Shortfest, LA Film Festival, Outfest, Holy Shorts, and so many more. On this episode, we discuss her short films Boys, 23 and Me, and a lot more. Hi, Stephanie. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've seen your work, so I'm so happy that you're able to come on the podcast and discuss it with me. You've done a lot of stuff as a producer, and I can't wait to discuss it with you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and to get to talk to you too.
So tell us, how does a producer who's received her BFA in theater become a film producer? How did that work?
Well, it's a great question. I came to LA and I started acting, and I was in auditions and going and working and moving back and forth and kind of, you know, beginning to acknowledge like there was a lot of people who were making their own work. I'm a big theater maker as well. And so that's always been a part of the way that I've done theater. Like I love a good role that's pre-written by a playwright and is, you know, handed to you and you can dig in. But I've also gotten to do a lot of like devised work and found myself really enjoying the creation process. And so often, you know, when you're creating theater, you're kind of doing so many other pieces. So I just naturally started to find myself in various roles. And as I was auditioning in LA, you know, I kind of really came in at a time where people started to heavily make their own work. And so it just became a natural progression. I worked for a writer for a while, Jose Rivera, and he's a playwright and a screenwriter. And during the time I worked with him and his then wife, there was a lot of producerial work that they were kind of exploring. And so that kind of set me on the path of even just beginning to know how, but it was kind of a mix of looking around and the progression of wanting to make some of my own work and then falling in with people to be like, how do you even do this? Cause I really have no clue. And so that's kind of the long answer and just the slow mold into something that became producing.
So you said you started at a time when many other actors were starting to create their own work. What time was this and what type of work were people creating?
I think, you know, it was like new media, you know, which is now fully established. And, you know, most of our content, a lot of it is coming from streaming platforms. But at that time, it was like, you know, Netflix was still sending out DVDs and people were kind of creating their, you know, they were creating content. Like I had a lot of actor friends who were doing new media projects through SAG and becoming actually SAG actors. So these were various avenues and people would kind of loop me in, or I'd be auditioning for a project that clearly seemed like this was something that they had written and that they were making. It just seemed to be possible. Cameras were becoming more readily available, like an access for people. So, you know, it was in the last 7 years, I'd say, that you know, before that, that I was watching that happen. And then that's kind of when I started to recognize, like, I want to do that. I want to figure out how to do that. And it also just became about, you know, what am I possible for in terms of, honestly, work? Like, how can I make myself have more skills in this filmmaking world besides coming in and auditioning, which felt, you know, I enjoy auditioning, you know, there's a whole level of it, but it really, you create a lot of power for yourself when you can make and write things, and collaborate with people to create content.
See, that's absolutely amazing what you said, because I had no idea you were going to say that. And as a former actor myself, I felt exactly the same.
Oh, really?
You know, it was a point where you could see people, actors some kind of maybe modern musicians, whatever, people were creating things for actors to be a part of. So you'd get the script and you'd get an idea that maybe it wasn't from a writer or whatever. And you audition and you're a part of it. And then there's the other aspect of, you know, I'm sitting at home. I loved my agent. She was great and everything, but how long am I going to wait by the phone? And if I do get a gig, how long am I going to be paid from the commercial or whatever it's going to be? And then, you know, I start reading about DSLR cameras and things like that. And you just kind of want to put it on yourself to mm-hmm. create and empower yourself and give you more skills in this crazy kind of new media industry and whatever.
Right.
So when you go ahead.
Well, there's just so much passion. I think, you know, you find it in this business. There's so much. And then there's also the practical aspects of, like, how do you grow within it? Because that's a piece that you want to keep expanding and you do need to become technical and you do need to be able to really develop your craft. So the more angles you can do it, I think it just creates opportunities for you, in a lot of different ways and in a lot of different, it's expanded my life in so many capacities, even in roles that have nothing to do with producing. So that's been interesting.
In what ways has it expanded your life?
I think I came in as an actor and I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. And you have to learn that if you're not in the business, if you don't have people to show you. And like, I recognized immediately, like, you're going to have to learn business etiquette and skills. Cause as an actor, you are your business and you need to know how to run it. And I was clueless. I just had no sensibility around that. So I started working in, like, you know, administrative education jobs, because that was something that I knew, and like education. But yeah, I mean, even just, you know, jobs that I continue to do outside that are not producing, but that I, you know, earn an income from, I've grown. And even just the kind of chutzpah to get out and ask questions or try to make something happen, which you have to do, that's opened a lot more doors for me in capacities that I needed to figure out, you know.
Completely understand. I completely understand. And opening doors and figuring out things are key to being a producer. Yeah. Key.
Yeah.
Tell us about the first film you produced. What was that experience like? And what was the film itself about?
That was a beautiful experience. It was kind of a magical experience. Yeah. My partner, A.L. Resch, who was the director of the film, he and I met randomly in a coffee shop. A friend of mine saw me there and kind of said hello. And she's like, oh, I just was meeting with my friend and he's looking for a producer. And so, you know, we kind of said, exchanged hellos. And then we, after that, kind of, you know, talked about this project. And it was clear to me right away, you know, I'd seen one other film that he had done and he'd given me the script, and I I could tell like the subtlety and the beauty that he was aiming for. And, you know, and so I really wanted to do it. And the script, the film was about two young boys. So the film was called Boys. And it's about this sleepover, their best friends, and it's kind of their initial sexual attraction to each other and recognizing that. And so it was an incredibly delicate process because we were dealing with young actors and exploring a very, you know, heavy topic that we wanted to really, you know, support the actors in. And we both of us had never really done this before, so it was also kind of a, you know, I think a naivete that we went into it, but sometimes that's, you know, the best way if you have good intentions and are, you know, I think we were both smart and well-meaning about how we went about it, and we did really go about it very very neatly. I think you can, you know, you can do a lot of projects in a more guerrilla style, but we went through all the avenues. We, you know, went through the agents, we made the contracts, we got the permit. I mean, we did everything very legitly because of the content and because we were working with minors. And we had, you know, good relationships with both the mothers of the boys, and it felt like a very positive experience. And I think everyone on set, you know, felt that way too. So it's something I'm very proud of, and have a lot of great relationships from that film.
And what was it about that story that drew you towards it?
It just took place over the course of one evening. And it was set, you know, in the 90s actually. And I loved it because it's about boys. It was purely about the innocence of these boys who were recognizing something in themselves. And I think that in all of its storytelling is the piece that I love, is when you can just ground something in the beauty of humanity and the beauty of a human and the specificity of a human, and then get really complicated. and you know, I remember certain people kind of watching it or maybe feeling uncomfortable, because it is about young men who are exploring or recognizing their sexuality. And it wasn't graphic. There was nothing, you know, blatant in the film, but that is a part of a young man's journey, is kind of becoming sexual, becoming, and you know, alone, but then also with another. And for all, everyone, you know, that can be their experience. So I just really loved how it was so grounded in play, in curiosity, and it wasn't about making it into anything else, but just kind of a discovery and a realization. And it really was so subtly opened up. And I know that because of the film that he had showed me prior, I recognized that was where he was heading in the script. And I could see how he was going to be able to handle this really delicately. And we worked together so, you know, extensively in order to how to communicate that on all levels. Like, you know, we had a dance rehearsal for them to explore, you know, proximity together in a really, you know, in a fun way that it didn't make it complicated or confusing necessarily for the boys who played these roles.
And I must say, many people, when they do their first film as a producer, writer, or director, they always say, okay, I'm going to grab a couple of friends, I'm going to find my uncle's old 8mm camera or shoot my iPhone or something like that, and just go for it and do it that way. It's bold and remarkable that you went the opposite direction and did it the complete professional way to do it. What were your fears going for it that way? And how long did it take?
Actually, well, and this was supported. It was his thesis film at CalArts. So I never went to film school, but he was in film school. So he definitely had, I mean, we brought friends in for sure. So that was fantastic. And that made, you know, the crew aspect communal and very positive. And I think, you know, to Eyal's credit, he is very much the go-getter and understood that there needed to be a professional aspect to kind of delve into this work. And I kind of brought that in the realm that I had already, like I had been working, you know, I'd been working with Jose, who I was dealing with, you know, agents, and I was dealing with managers and production companies. And so I had already kind of experienced that in working with him, and then also, you know, with my own experience as an actor. And I understood kind of how this could come across and how this should come across. And we really flagged that. I mean, when we had our first audition, because we did, before we got a casting director, we did do a casting session, and we put out the broad statement, and then we had a whole bunch of people kind of submit. And then we wrote a specific letter to all of the actors, and they were all parents who were submitting their children, and told them exactly, you know, and with some images, so they understood what they were actually going to be. And almost everyone dropped out of the audition.
Wow.
So we had like probably, you know, and we didn't go through a casting director originally. So that might have been, you know, I completely understand why parents pulled their kids out. But we actually hired both of our actors through that first audition. And So it was really useful, but it was also, you know, that was kind of scary, kind of, you know, watching everyone drop away as you kind of provide more content around what this experience could be.
And one of your other films that I saw was Lee Rebound? Is that right?
Lee Rebound, yeah. Oh, okay. So it's kind of a French play on The Rebound, yeah.
I see. Sorry, my French is...
I still struggle saying it.
But I really, really found that interesting. I mean, that was just out there, because yeah, you know, when I read about it, I thought, okay, I'll give this a watch, and it's like I kind of thought, okay, I'm watching someone in a dream, or am I watching this tale or something? But tell us about the film and your experience in it.
Have you thought of upgrading your cinematography game? Would you like to have an ASC cinematographer mentor you for free? Join veteran cinematographer Suki Medenzovic, ASC. Disney, Pixar, FX Networks, Netflix, American Horror Story. As he teaches you how to create beautiful images using three lighting techniques he has mastered on film sets over his 30 plus years in the film industry. Each technique uses basic, low-cost lighting equipment so that anyone can achieve beautiful visuals no matter your project's budget. If you want to take your cinematography to the next level, visit filmmakingconversations.com to sign up for instant access.
Yes. Yeah, that one was, I think that was my second film. And so Laura came to me. I mean, her and I, again, like it's kind of, I've just been lucky. I've got a lot of good friends, smart, talented people who are like coming to me and saying, I've got this story. And she wanted to make this film. And this was her first film. In, you know, as a director, and she had the story, and we kind of started to explore how it could be made. And, you know, she also had a very clear vision. Both Eyal and Laura had very clear visions about how they could see the film. And she was like, going to be shot in France. And I was like, oh, okay, let's see. All right, let's do it. And so we ended up working with a line producer out in France, Alban. Laura had been, you know, she just started scouring for all of the possibilities and found the chateau in France and was like, this is the place. And really, once she booked, she ended up booking that location, which was like an incredible steal because we filmed there, we housed our entire crew there. I mean, it was, okay. It was amazing. And it was, I mean, basically we shot everything in the chateau, but we housed our crew all there. And then all the grounds and the surrounding areas we were able to shoot on and all the different rooms. So it was a wild and fun experience. And then of course there was the part in Los Angeles too, but we kind of just had a great time. It was an exciting and fun shoot. And it was amazing to go into another country, and to work with Albane was the line producer there, and she, you know, she brought an entire crew. So we brought three of the main actors, and then we had one actor from France who was actually, you know, he was a friend of Laura's. And then our DP came with us, and pretty much the rest of the crew was in France. So that was really, you know, quite a great experience to get to explore, and particularly because it was, you know, an independent film. I mean, a very, very, you know, small independent film was exciting to be in another country. And Laura, you know, she acted in the film as well. And you know, we're going to be actually making a new film, coming right up. So we got a grant from Women in Film, which is exciting, and we'll be shooting it probably this March. So I'm excited to work with her again and get to watch a new one unfold, because it's a really, really beautiful script as well. Very, very different from Le Rebound, but I know it's going to be an excellent story, which I'm excited about.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. But in Le Rebound, there's some shots in there. I just wonder, like, it's a small crew, so how do you shoot such intimate scenes, and how long did they take, and how did everyone feel about them?
That one was kind, you know, kind of fun and silly, but definitely, you know, it's a black comedy, so it's a little more, there are definitely very intimate scenes in there, but I think everyone, you know, they got the script. Everyone was asked to do this. It wasn't really an auditioned piece. And so it was, in that regard, we, you know, sent them the script and they, you know, came in. Carolyn, who played the other female role, she was one of the producers as well. So this was a piece that in terms of the cast was much more kind of friend and pulled in that way. And then our crew was, you know, pulled together. I didn't know most of them. I didn't know any of them actually. Because, you know, Albane really brought them from France. But it was a great group and we just had a lot of fun with it. The intimate scenes though, you know, we do those respectfully and everybody's pretty much out of the room except for those who absolutely need to be there. And I think with all those things, you just have to bring a sense of professionalism. Because I've been an actor on sets, I really do have a good sense of how bad it can feel if your people are everywhere. And what it really requires to kind of put that energy out, not only intimately, but just in any scene, you are really, you know, we're all exhausted after a day of shooting, but actors can really have to be on in a way that no one else has to be on, except maybe sometimes the director and the DP, I think, you know, but there's just such a vulnerability, that it requires. So I really want to protect their space when they're shooting. And obviously when it's intimate, it's even more crucial.
And the film itself, you said it was shot in France. I mean, it's great to actually go to France and experience it and be in another country. But do you think it could have been done in America? Is there any particular reason why you had to go to France?
I think, you know, when you think about production design and you think about going to a location and in its authenticity, the amount of money we paid for that location and then required basically no production designer, because like even things, you know, the story was to be set in France and that was kind of the whole chateau in France versus something here in the United States. The amount of money it could cost in order to kind of make that look like what it naturally looked like there. There's an authenticity on the set and even just kind of this exterior space. It just, there was a freedom there. And yeah, we could have found something here that could have worked, but it made it so much more authentic and real in that location. And, you know, we Laura had a friend there too. So even just kind of in the figuring out of where we were going to stay, you know, just as we landed and things like that, how do you bring the few people that we did bring, and who are going to be traveling with us and coordinating all of that? There was a lot to coordinate to figure that out, but being the best, absolute best decision for that film.
That makes sense. I can get what you mean when you say that, because it looks so authentic. It doesn't look like someone's quickly grabbed some stuff from a, you know, secondhand shop or whatever. Not to say you would do that or that's bad if anyone's listening, but straight away I kind of thought, where's this filmed? Where's this? Because the accent sounds completely right, the French accent. So I kind of thought, oh, okay, where is this? So it's good to know that you actually went there and went for it on a short that looked so beautiful and acted so well and written so beautifully. So we know you can be involved with narrative films and they work and they're great. But what about 23andMe? How did that come around? Because that's a very interesting doc.
My friend Nardeep, actually, who he directed Monogamish. My friend Sachin and Nardeep and I, we worked on that together. And then Nardeep went to school with Shal, I believe, in New York. And so he was looking for a producer in LA. So he had shot the piece in Vietnam already and was looking for somebody to shoot the other part in Minnesota and primarily in LA. So that was really Shal's complete imagination. It was going to incorporate stop motion, which was completely new to me. And I had never worked in that capacity. But I met with Shal and then we kind of just started to hash it out. It was all kind of quick that it came together. I think, you know, we spoke on the phone a few times and then I met him and I think he was leaving for a bit and then coming back. He was going to Vietnam and then coming back. So that part, that leg was completely, you know, he really handled all of that. And then, when he came to LA, we got that piece together. And so Jared Levy, who was an excellent and is an excellent DP, came and it was Kristen, who did the production design there. So it was all just in this space. And Brett was, you know, the animation and stop motion. He kind of oversaw all of that. So it was just really amazing to watch the specificity that it requires. And so we really just did all of that in one room. But it was really Shao's story and it was a personal story for him and how, you know, he felt like in these two worlds, inside himself and also, outside of himself and the coming together and the recognition. I think that one in particular kind of, you know, I love stories that are complicated and not clear, because I think that that's that's where we often find ourselves. That's the most, the places where we have or experience a lot of potential growth, but also maybe a lot of discomfort. And, you know, I also think that in our society, those are the places that, that people reject also, you know, and I think, or either self-reject or there are external rejections. And I find it so important to hone in on why or what is it that, that creates that discomfort. And I thought this was just such a beautiful kind of acceptance of, you know, Shal's personal journey of becoming who he is, which is just this creative, imaginative, wonderful human being who acknowledges like the beauty of all of these two huge aspects of himself. And just the way that he envisioned it was just incredible to communicate. So I feel really proud of that and how it ultimately came together.
So he himself is 51% white and 48% Asian.
Well, I think that was like, you know, how it was also part of 23andMe. So there was an aspect of going through that process and, you know, identifying as a, you know, that's kind of the joke within it with some of his friends. He's identifying as a minority. And yet, in fact, it's showing up on his DNA report that he's 51% white, which now he's no longer the minority. You know, like it was just kind of the joke of that. And I imagine that led to something. And I don't know how real or how clear you can make that definitive percentage, but it led to the questioning of what makes you ultimately.
And he mentions in America he's seen as Asian, and in Asia he's seen as white, basically. So I can understand how he would feel like he doesn't have a home to a certain degree, or he's not accepted and things like that. So when you spoke to him, or when you all went through the pre-production process, the development stages of everything, was he upset at all? Did you have to deal with someone featuring, starring in a documentary who may have broken down at times or have been sensitive to certain issues?
He never portrayed that to me, that he was not that he'd broken down in any way. I think it was something that he, you know, he may continue to struggle with, but I think has come to some acceptance within himself. As you know, I think particularly as children, where we are wanting to belong, you know, at all ages we want to belong. That's a piece of humanity. I think that's a crucial aspect, and why, you know, when you feel like you're an outsider, it can feel so devastating and isolating. So I never got the sense that he was, you know, experiencing that as we were making the film per se. I think it was so technical and so demanding that there were other pieces that felt maybe like, you know, more of that aspect. But it, you know, I definitely imagine that was a big part of his growing up and kind of finding his identity within that. I from my experience, he was very in command and yet he also wrote it and was able to kind of get to that vulnerable place of learning and expressing who he is.
And how was it received? You know, documentaries about race and ethnicity can kind of explode, or they can kind of be well received, or they can, you know, there's people have various different opinions. So how was this one received?
Absolutely. Yeah, so this one was part of, it was part of like the 23andMe and Tribeca Foundation that really kind of propelled and gave it, gave the money to make this project. So I think ultimately it was very well received. I mean, we showed it at Tribeca, and it was, I mean, it was just, even just in kind of all the feedback and all of the comments and things like that, I think I had a lot of people who are of mixed race who said that this really hit home for them, because they felt, you know, a friend from high school had reached out to me, another friend of mine from college, who they experienced that feeling of not belonging necessarily to this group and not belonging to that group, but not, it was just kind of a difficult thing to straddle. So I think I never received any sort of negative feedback from it. So that,
oh, brilliant. That's good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When you say like your friends from college who felt the same way, were they half Asian and half white, or black and white, or was it across the spectrum? Or?
My friend from high school is Asian and in German, he's white, and my friend from college is black and white. And so his mother's white and his father's black. And so, I mean, you know, we didn't go in deep, but they just kind of acknowledged like this, I resonate with this because it's my experience too, basically.
I'm glad you got to show it at Tribeca. That's a great place to show a doc.
Yes.
Happy for you to have done so. And you've got funding from Women in Film, which I've heard a lot about, for your next project. Are you able to tell us a bit more about your next project?
Yes. So this is a story. It's called Riverman. And it's Laura wrote this one, and it's about an encounter. It's really following a man who's kind of slowly, an elderly man who is slowly losing all of his options. And we encounter him in the beginning of the film, where he is out, evicted from his home. And, you know, he is a vet and he is looking for a place to sleep. So it's really exploring that moment of becoming homeless, and just he encounters a young woman who's also kind of in a desperate state, and the two just have just an evening of real connection and acceptance of the other. And you know, it doesn't have, you know, clean and tidy bow, which I always appreciate, because these scenarios are incredibly complicated. And so I'm excited to, you know, we're just in the process of making it and putting it together at the very kind of beginning of it. So we've got a lot to pull together, but I'm looking forward to it and really excited to kind of find the actor who will play this gentleman who is losing, you know, particularly at the end of life, which you see, you know. And I live in Los Angeles, and there's people who have, you know, created their homes all over the streets in all different areas. And, you know, you can drive past and make a judgment or just feel like, you know, the town is littered with like homes, tent homes. Yeah. And I don't know if we want to solve the problem, but it's a complicated problem, and everyone has their own story as to how they get to this place. So I'm excited to kind of delve into watching someone who really is at this place of losing their shelter in a way that's not just shelter but an actual home, and also kind of, you know, just the acceptance of these two individuals. Like it's you know, you as we become more progressive about understanding people's situations, like, you know, the term of experiencing homelessness or, you know, how we look at these scenarios, because it's, you know, people can experience this for a period of time. They can experience for a long time. There's a lot of different scenarios to how they got into this position. Sometimes it's their own self-making. Sometimes it's completely not, you know, it's a series of bad circumstances. So it's complicated. And yeah, as I feel like I keep saying, I enjoy the complications of people's stories.
Good. I can tell. I'm happy for it. You know, coming out with some good stuff. So do you think it's because you drive past and you see these shelters, these tents, these homes that has driven you to be associated with this documentary? Has Laura done the same thing as well? She's seen all of these shelters and homes, because I've seen footage of LA when the homeless, it seems, you know, quite disturbing that it's at such a level. So do those things draw you into telling these stories?
This story, I think, was a personal story for Laura. You know, it's a narrative short, so it's not a documentary, and it is more personal experience. I recently had an experience with a young man as well, and it was really complicated, because you want to solve the problem, and the problem isn't necessarily yours to solve necessarily, you know. Like, what do you, you know, there's so many more aspects. It's a job, it's a home, it's a, you know, is someone on drugs, is someone just out of luck? Like, each story is so specific. It's bigger than just, you know, solving the homeless crisis. It's each individual's personal complicated scenario that got them that they're at this point. And I, in my own experience, recognize myself like asking questions or trying to offer, you know, can I offer you this? Can I help you with this? And it was like, it was an immediate problem solve that, and I couldn't know what their fuller scenario was, or even what they actually wanted, and maybe why they're choosing this in some capacity. Or, you know, maybe they have another option in another place. So I even found myself kind of trying to get to an easy solution of like, well, what are your options? And that wasn't mine to solve. You know, so those are, I think to the question you're asking, I think she experienced this in a personal story that she wanted to write and create, and I have recently come into a scenario that made me feel very excited to explore and share this as well, and I think it's on people's minds, you know, like LA is significantly. The rents are incredibly high, but we're not the only city that this is happening. It's happening all over. So something's going on in our country that so many people don't have a place to live. There's something going on, you know, and you kind of have to start to ask those questions, and doing it in film is the way that I like to do it.
True. Me too. I understand what you mean. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. And looking for the actor, the lead actor in this film, what type of actor are you looking for?
He's a man in his 70s. I think, you know, there's a few people that we are eyeing that we would like try to reach out directly to, maybe to make an offer and see if that's possible. I think we are also looking at some casting directors to see if we can go through them to pull in maybe a group of people who might be interested in this project. So it's a little bit more, you know, I don't know actually how it will play out, but we'll probably go to a few people with an offer and then go from there to see if they'd be interested in doing it. It's a short film, and it's, you know, we have a certain amount of money, but it's still, you know, I think that's what's interesting about producing is just it's really about matching the project with the people and their interests and what, you know, it's a matchmaking experience, really.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Laura has been a producer herself, am I right?
I think she has produced in that she has helped produce her films, you know. Yeah, so she's primarily directing and focusing on directing.
So
but
Laura,
you kind of happen to, you know, every director who's doing their projects are in some capacity. They're in there.
Yeah. And it's great that she's been able to act as well. Now mm-hmm. you yourself, Stephanie, come from an acting background and you're producing. So how long is it going to be before we see you acting again?
You know, that's a great question. It's funny because I started producing. I think I'm a person who kind of needs to figure something out before I start doing it all. Hmm. And I kind of had to let acting go a little bit just for my own sense of kind of feeling good. It was not, it no longer, you know, just being in this business, I kind of had to release some of it. And I came back and explored it again in auditioning and in theater. And I love it. I really do. So I don't know. I think it's something when I started producing, I became more interested in the stories than my role in front of the camera. And it became more about what does this story need? And I didn't necessarily think it needed me to play a role in it. You know, so it wasn't, it's just, you know, my career, my life is pretty organic in the way that it kind of comes to mind. I mean, I have hopes and dreams, absolutely. Mm. But the way that it's unfolding is just through COVID, I kind of had to take a step back. You know, there are various projects and it just made me think about what are the stories I'm telling? How am I participating? How do I want to keep growing in this? And so I have been thinking a lot more about kind of what stories do I want to get involved with and also maybe develop or kind of become a little more personal with. I've stepped into a lot of projects. People have come to me for projects. And so I am at a point where I'm exploring how they become a little more personalized. I don't know if that's the word, but just, I think, yeah, developing them and finding the ones that really sing to me. You know, as you continue to do this, producing, you know, small, like shorter films with smaller budgets is one thing. And as they grow, the money grows, the time grows, everything. And so it becomes, you know, you really want to be with projects that you can really hang with for a long time because you're gonna. So it's that I've thought about a lot more and what my role is as a producer and maybe beyond that as well.
But Stephanie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. And I really love looking at your work. And I hope you're able to send me anything new you're doing. That'd be brilliant. And I'm certainly going to look out for Boys also, because great trailer.
I'll send it to you.
Oh, thank you. I've never actually spoken to a producer who's done short films that has never actually done the guerrilla route, where they're just kind of run and gun. So, you know, I take my hat off to you, because I think that's a really bold and hard thing to do. So well done on that aspect of things as well.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely run and gunned it as well. So.
Oh, okay.
But it's.
On what work? Because I couldn't see any run and gun on your website.
There was some aspects of HAPA that was. And, you know, we try to make it look as you know, polished as possible. But I've also done a lot of I've done a lot of films that not necessarily narrative shorts, but certainly in various productions where we've had a lot of slim scenarios. I think, you know, if you can get a isolated location, that helps a lot, you know, in terms of how how you make it work. But yeah, I've gotten to go through certain aspects of it, so I do understand how to put it together in the way where you go through all the correct channels, and then you can start to figure out what channel you don't need to go down in order to make this happen. And we always talk about those. So, yeah.
I can imagine. I can imagine for sure. But Stephanie, thanks again, and we'll speak soon.
Thank you so much, Damon. It was just so great to talk to you. I appreciate it.